Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass of Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions will be here to take a look at the weather forecast. We'll hear also yesterday afternoon's recording of Commodity Week. We were live at the Busch Ag Resources Anheuser-Busch Malting Plant in Moorhead, Minnesota, with Frayne Olson of North Dakota State University, Advanced Trading's Tommy Grisafi, and Randy Martinson of Martinson Ag Risk Management from right here in Fargo, North Dakota. So stay with us for this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week for the whole hour, if you can, on Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, I'm out of the office today, so here are the numbers as they were trading during the noon hour, but these are not settlement prices. July corn at 449 and three quarters at that time was up 2 cents. December about 11 and a half cents higher at 459 and a half, and the May futures in the corn at 467 and three quarters up 10 and three quarters. That March contract, by the way, was up 11 at 465 and a half. The soybeans at 903 over the noon hour up 6 3/4. November at 929 up 11 and three quarters, and the January futures there at 940 and a half, up 11 and three quarters. Next year's July at 963 and three quarters, 8 3/4 higher. Bean oil, 4 cents higher. The bean meal up $1. Wheat futures during the noon hour. Again, these are not settlement prices because I'm traveling for the day. July wheat unchanged at 536 and a quarter. The September at 521 and three quarters, up 1/4. That for the soft red. The hard red July unchanged at 461 and a quarter. September there at 465 and a half, up 4 cents for the day. The live cattle futures in Chicago during the noon hour again at 108.40, 52 and a half cents higher. The October at 109.82 and a half, up 50 cents. And feeder cattle at $141.47 and a half cents, down $1.17 and a half. Lean hogs at $71.17 and a half cents, 42 and a half lower. However, the August at $80.45, $1.27 and a half cents higher. The closing market report is a production of Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Mike Zuzolo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, Michael, thank you so much for being with us, and good afternoon to you on this Friday.
Great to be with you, Todd. Happy Friday again.
Happy Friday to you. Hey, yesterday, USDA released some new numbers. They didn't change anything really from, well, depending on how you looked at it, from the acreage and the WASDE numbers for corn. We went down, and now we have managed to make some moves to the upside. Can you tell me about what's happened over the last 24 hours or so?
Yeah, a couple, three big things I think the market's digesting and has taken a track on. And obviously, the corn acreage number, we all kind of felt, I think, generalizing how we felt in the analytical world, that the corn acreage number was going to be one that we could probably set aside. And we were going to look more at the corn yield, corn demand, and corn ending stocks. Having said that, the corn ending stocks burgeoning over 2 billion bushels for this new crop was led almost completely on the idea of not only WASDE picking up the NAS acreage base. And again, we can probably put that off to the side, but we also saw a massive increase in old crop carryover. And so it really calls into question the grain stocks report, which corn stocks came in on the low end. It showed farmers holding a lot more than elevators relative to the past in June 1. And in this situation, Todd, I think because of the wheat ending stocks globally and the soybean ending stocks domestically, the trade, because of weather, has elected to say, let's just not even deal with the corn when it comes to bigger supply potential. Let's assume supply is going to just keep falling, whether it's acres, demand, or yield. Whichever you pick, supply is falling faster than demand as long as the weather is hot and dry this next 7 to 10 days, and this big tropical storm misses us completely in the primary corn belt that's been suffering ever since March, essentially.
So that tropical storm, as we'll hear in just a bit, is expected to come northward and then make a hard right once it gets to the bottom of Illinois and turn to move across Tennessee and out to the eastern seaboard. It has been hot, or is expected to be hot, across the bulk of the Corn Belt. I guess that's where the trade really has finally decided it's going to put its emphasis, is on the weather.
I think so, but I would also caution, and I'm saying this to myself as much as to anybody, and I'm saying this to the clients and subscribers very vocally on the end of the week trade here, that we can't turn away from 2018 hedges here. And you and I talked about this, and after that acreage report, you'd said, I'm worried about the downside. And I said, I'd like to get a chance at getting up to the old highs. We're at that level. We have profitable levels. And there's three things that could come in Tuesday and change our world completely. Number one, the models are wrong. And all of a sudden we see Monday, Tuesday, chances for rain increase dramatically, which I'm no meteorologist, Todd, but I think that looking at these models all week, there is a possibility for that. More importantly, China's GDP numbers coming out next week. If it falters and the dollar takes a safe haven bid, and we haven't made any real headway on the U.S.-China trade negotiations. China hasn't purchased any agricultural commodities. This outside market could turn against us fairly quickly next week if we get the wrong kind of numbers. And I think third, we've had such a nice move up in the wheat market. It is not wrong to go ahead and reward this market a little bit. So I've got some things out there in the early part of next week. And you throw on top of that the possibility, if not the probability, that USDA could come in with a quick increase in crop conditions before they take them down next week, the following week. I think you really do want to look at the 18 sales here in the corn and even the beans at this stage, but much more in the corn because we have been able to get to that $900 revenue profit level in many, many areas, especially your listing area where basis is shooting 40, 50, 60 over.
Are we to make on soybeans anything from yesterday's tweet from the president that the Chinese aren't moving quickly enough to purchase U.S. agricultural goods?
Yes, we are, because African swine fever was found in Hubei province again this week. The crush margins in China are going in the red again, and Chinese meal stocks are burgeoning again. And I mean burgeoning, meaning they're getting up towards the 3 and 5 year highs. I sincerely believe that the USDA is still very much too high on demand in terms of import demand for soybeans at this point, because it's not just China. It's the whole Asian rim that is looking at a significant problem when it comes to the protein demand and feed demand when it comes to the soy meal. So I think there are still, I wouldn't be surprised at this point, unless we got a big yield cut in the next couple reports, I wouldn't be surprised that this 795, 800 million bushel new crop carryover number is not pretty close to the low end of our carryover numbers for the crop year, given the demand and what we'll probably suffer from.
Have you been thinking much about how the losses in the pork industry there across that Asian Pacific rim might be offset by consumption of poultry, and in turn, what that means for bean meal?
I have thought about that, and I've looked at the numbers, and you just can't get from point A to point B. There's just not enough pork. There's not enough poultry and beef in the world to offset a country that consumes and produces 50% of the world pork production and 50% of the world pork consumption. You can get partly there, but I don't think there's any tangible way that you can get there. And I think you see that because the Chinese government is really pressing hard producers to come in and repopulate and get their breeding inventories back up online there. But the producers, from the ones I know that have been over in China recently, they are really fighting that because they do not want to take another hit of African swine fever and essentially go out of business if they lose their inventory this next time around. The problem is not solved yet as far as containing that disease.
Can you return to yesterday's WASDE's figures and talk about the world numbers, in particular for wheat?
Yeah, big numbers there, because we had our five biggest competitors take 10 million metric tons off the production numbers, and that was very helpful. Not as good still as in terms of low production as 18-19, but helps a lot, and it helps justify why the wheat, as the July goes off today, why that July wheat went premium and stayed premium to the September, and we stayed in this inverted market. So those world wheat numbers are very, very healthy. I was shocked, literally shocked, that USDA took the yield up to 50 bushels here in the United States. Given the yield reports I have, and given that we are nowhere near done in winter wheat harvest, it's kind of like the acreage base. How do you know it's that big with such early returns coming in all over the place? I've heard 20 to 70 bushel yields all over the place in a big part of the country. I myself saw in Alney, Effingham area last week on my way back, wheat was being baled for straw. They weren't even taking it in to cut to get the wheat out of it. So I think USDA is going to have to revisit this. The question is, when will they do that?
I drove through that area this week. I was just really flabbergasted by how poor the crops are in that only to Effingham area. I assume you saw the same thing.
Exactly. You know, going from Alney to Newton to Effingham, we probably took the same route and up to Taylorville. It was just absolutely crazy. I mean, I've driven that route for 6 years since we've lived out here to go see Mary Jane's mom, and I've just never seen it that bad and that late, and just wheat straw just sitting out there in the field on the July 4th holiday. So, yeah, I think USDA's still got some issues there.
What will they do in August?
A lot of the colleagues I've spoken with since the report Thursday suspect that the August numbers are going to be more in line. I'm going to take a contrarian view to that because of the last commodity week we did. And you didn't put this in, Todd, but you should have, because you said that you thought NAS would take the lead and that WASD would take, or WAOB would take the NAS acreage number. I didn't feel like they should have, that it was not necessary because everything's so much in the air and this resurvey is coming in. But the WAOB did do that. So I really question the reliability of the August numbers as a result of that. So I'm going to stick with looking at yield and looking at demand and the idea that if we can stay close to a 1.5 billion bushel corn carryover, 800 million bushel bean carryover, we can probably make some new highs off of these highs that we put in June.
Anything for the livestock folks before I let you go for the day?
Yeah, big thing with the livestock is as we get more African swine fever, I think the market's going to have to come back to the supply-demand fundamentals and get off this trade bearishness, this U.S.-China trade bearishness when it comes to Chinese pork imports. At some point, they're going to draw down their stocks. My sense is from contacts and people I've talked to is that they're really close to drawing down those supplies, and they're going to need to start importing from somebody, maybe not the United States, but from somebody. So global pork prices, I think, are on their way up as we get into August. I think that then turns the cattle market back higher because our dressed weights have been down, but nobody's really cared about that because hogs have taken the front driver's seat with pushing the market lower.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, sir.
You have a great weekend. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, let's start with Barry.
Yeah, Barry. We've been noticing this showing up in the models actually going back almost 8 days now. So it's been impressive to see how well our longer range models have picked up on Barry. You know, in the overnight hours, really started to see a little bit more organization out of this tropical system. But the big story is, where is its path going to go and how strong will it be? I'll be honest with you, I don't really care too much about its wind speed strength for almost anybody, even those that live along the coast. It's going to be more of a story of its rainfall. And as Barry goes north, it's going to hit somewhere right there on the southern Louisiana border. The right-hand side of it's going to go right over the top of New Orleans, causing some major problems. Those winds are going to be pushing against the Mississippi River. You add that to the potential of 20 plus inches of rain, and we're in some pretty serious trouble down there in the Delta. Well, that storm system right now, as it moves north, is going to interact with a front that's kind of draped kind of through the Ohio River Valley. It snakes down into the lower Mississippi River Valley. And that, combined with a few other features in the mid and upper levels of the atmosphere, probably going to take the path of Barry straight up towards southern Illinois, then make a hard right turn, a hard turn to the east, and go over Tennessee and Kentucky, which means we here in Illinois, we might get some of the cloud cover out of Barry, but each day that I get a new forecast out from our global models, it looks as though getting rain from that particular system is diminishing with every new forecast. So that's a big change over what we saw just 3, 4, 5 days ago, when it looked as though Barry was going to go quickly into Texas, then turn north, which would have given us a lot more rain. And to be honest, I'm looking at my yard right now, and I see some cracks showing up here. We need some rainfall. It's so weird to say that, but that's how it works, right? You got to have the readily available, you know, regular rainfall to really get a crop to be huge and keep my grass green. But certainly it's right now, all hopes are on Barry, and Barry's going to turn to the right before it gets too far to the north.
Well, what does the pattern look like?
Well, the problem is, you know, if you would have called me, you know, middle of last week, I would have told you an entirely different story, to be honest with you. I would have said, yeah, the heat's around, the heat's going to last probably until about, you know, the 17th, 18th, and then we're going to go back over to a much more normal pattern. Well, things have evolved rapidly over the last few days, especially over this weekend. It's pointing more toward a ridging event, a large, broad ridge that's going to set up across the midsection of the United States. Now, the thing with that is that puts more rain north. That puts rain that puts those ridge riders in the north central plains and in southern Canada going into the Great Lakes states, not ours, but the ones like northern Wisconsin and Michigan. And the problem with that pattern is we're only going to get hit or miss showers and thunderstorms out of it. So it's going to be very, very hot compared to average. Remember, this is the hottest time of year climatologically. So it looks as though that might hang on. Maybe, I mean, this morning when I looked at the latest model runs, it may be around until July 27th, 28th. And when you look out that far, we got to remember there's still a lot of uncertainty as to whether or not we can keep this pattern going for the heat, even into the first week of August. And since we're so delayed in pollination, that's that time period now where we're starting to get concerned that there'll be some stress from heat and dryness when the crop's trying to pollinate.
Can you predict when this heat might abate?
Well, that's the tricky part. What we lost was what we call the base state of El Nino. Now, what does that mean? Well, we did have this weak El Nino event going on in the Pacific. And while it's there, it tends to keep the atmospheric motion fast. We tend to get quicker moving systems. We tend to get more rainfall. And we tend to see less extreme heat in the midsection of the country. Now, the correlations are weak between El Nino and our weather, but the correlation between our weather and the whole of the Pacific is much higher. We've lost that base state of El Nino right now, which means that the atmosphere is no longer behaving the way it would as if we had that El Nino event. And what that means is much longer waves in the flow of the atmosphere, and they tend to be much, much, much slower. So the end result of whatever I just said there to you is this: patterns are going to tend to become more blocked with time than they would have had we hung on to that El Nino event. And that is key to any long-range forecasting. But I'll tell you, anybody that tries to forecast in the beginning of August right now, if they express any sort of certainty in it, they're blowing smoke. I promise you, it's a tricky, tricky forecast.
And what about the new long-range forecasts?
Yeah, well, the big thing we can say about them is that we have seen a trend toward August and September and October, that time period. Actually, the models keep showing up a little bit warmer. So they had initially showed the middle part of the country being cool through the remainder of summer and early fall. We had all these discussions, you and I, about, whoa, if this crop doesn't mature, if we don't get some heat, we're in trouble. And there was all this concern about early frost. Well, that concern has not completely gone away. Okay, that hasn't gone away. But what has gone away is the models staying on that cooler bias. They've now moderated some, and you can actually look at them and say, wow, they're actually forecasting a much more normal progression through the rest of the year than they had been before, which was showing cool. So that's a big change for these longer range models.
Any more reason to discuss El Nino?
Well, I mean, just like we said, the El Nino event that is fading, if it goes over into La Nina for this upcoming winter, which is a possibility, that is certainly something that I'm concerned about, not for us, but for South America. It's been a while since South America's taken a big hit, the whole of it, you know, taken a big hit from an event like a big La Nina year. So we need to watch that carefully as the rest of summer goes on and as the rest of fall and winter get here, because that could be huge for them. The other thing is, if we continue to lose that base state of El Nino, that gives us a better chance of getting more tropical activity out of the Atlantic because it lessens wind shear. So there's a lot of us right now talking a lot about what's going on with that El Nino event and how it is fading. You got a good question there.
Anything to watch from Europe to China?
Well, when we think about Europe, much of Europe is dry right now. So in other words, when we look forward, you know, it's only been in the southern parts of Europe. I'm talking like Italy, far south. They've seen seen a lot of severe weather. Much of the rest of the European area has been on a drier bias and is forecast to continue to stay dry. There's some pockets of heavy rain, but not much. Come over to Ukraine, much closer to normal precipitation. Russian wheat belt, much closer to normal precipitation. They have a broader trough in that area, which is keeping them from extreme heat. But get over into India. The monsoon has slowed down, which means southern two-thirds of that subcontinent there is very, very dry compared to normal for this time of year. And that is something to be watching. In China, southeastern China, extremely wet on what's called the Mayu Front. And that front is putting down between 3 and 10 inches of rain just over the next 8 days. But we always have to look south of Beijing and then north and east of Beijing. And those two regions right now are on the drier side of things as we move forward throughout the rest of the month of July. So watching those areas carefully, but certainly the bigger weather story I think is happening right here in the United States.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Coming up next here on Illinois Public Media, Commodity Week, recorded at the Anheuser-Busch Grower Day event in Moorhead, Minnesota, yesterday.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
This is the July 11 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Our panelists for the program today include Tommy Grisafi. He is with Advanced Trading out of Mayville, North Dakota, from right here in Fargo, North Dakota, and we're recording at the Busch Ag Resources Malt Plant that belongs to Anheuser-Busch and their Growers Day, and we're joined by Randy Martinson of Martinson Ag Risk Management, along with NDSU Ag Marketing Specialist, Frayne Olson. Let's start with you, Frayne. How did you receive this morning's USDA numbers?
They came in pretty much like I had expected them, and well within the trading ranges. I didn't expect to see any major adjustments in the acreage numbers. I know there's some debate about that. When the June acreage report came out, WASD has a habit of just following those numbers, those NAS numbers. And again, the reason is if they don't use those numbers, what numbers do they use? And so from a policy standpoint, from a historical standpoint, they have been using those numbers for a while now, or that process for a while. I guess when I was looking at the numbers, I was also looking to see if they had made any adjustments primarily on the usage side. I didn't expect to see any big shocks on the production side, but I was looking for adjustments on the usage side, in particular kind of those export numbers. Does USDA see any shifts going on or potential shifts in the export market that we might be looking for, again, shifting production levels around the world? And we got some minor adjustments, but nothing major.
So what were those adjustments like?
On the usage side, so the export numbers, I guess kind of the surprise to me was the export number for wheat was up. And that was primarily because of some adjustments downward in the size of the Russian wheat production.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of our program online, on demand, anytime you'd like. The address is willag.org. You can also find us in iTunes, the Google Play Store, on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and of course the NPR One app. Our panelists for the week included Randy Martinson of Martinson Ag Risk Management from right here in Fargo, North Dakota. And that's where we are originating from, actually, the malt plant in Moorhead, Minnesota, but they're twin cities. We're also joined from Mayville, North Dakota, by Tommy Grisafi, and of course from NDSU, North Dakota State University, Frayne Olson has been our guest as well. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.